Latter-day Saint Home Educators is pleased to bring you this audio presentation, recorded live during the May 2014 Home Education Conference held in Virginia Beach, Virginia.
I'm just curious, the things that I'm going to be talking about, how many of you have children under four? Anybody? Okay, good. Because a lot of the things I'm going to talk about will be for younger children, but the principles still apply to older children. As our kids get older, their hearts tend to get a little bit harder, and it's sometimes harder to reach them, but the things that we use to make impressions on hearts in little children also work on big children. But I just want to say I love coming to these conferences because I go away filled with so much hope as I talk to you mothers and you fathers, if there's fathers in here, that you are raising a generation unlike has ever been in this world. And I love the spirit that I feel from you and the sincerity and the care that you are taking to teach your children, and I just hope that some of the things I talk about will give you some resources that you can use as you teach them. In the book of Jeremiah was lamenting what the great destruction that had happened to his people, the Jews, in his beautiful city, Jerusalem. He just wondered, how could this have happened to such a highly favored and chosen people? And he gives us a clue and a warning in chapter 12. The whole land is made desolate because no man pays attention to heart. We really have become a world in love affair with our minds. You know, we've got well-trained minds. We're worried about rigorous academics. I was reading a mother that had posted that she was teaching a preschool, and the parents want rigorous academics for their preschoolers. That we've just gotten on this treadmill to train the minds. And you rarely hear anybody that's worried about educating hearts. But it's our hearts that is the core of who we are. From our hearts, if our hearts are good, we have good actions. If our hearts are bad, we have bad actions and bad thoughts. So tending to the heart is critical. The proverb doesn't say, as a man thinketh, so is he. It says, as a man thinketh in his heart, so is he. If you've read The Little Prince, remember the fox said, only the heart sees rightly. What is essential is invisible to the eye. So this hour, I'm going to talk about educating hearts. I don't know if you get this impression, but it's almost like emotions have become a bad thing. Oh, you're so emotional. But our emotions are what set us in motion. Our emotions drive us. We are not cold, calculating machines. The thing that makes us human beings is because we feel. We feel, and children, from the time they're born, they come with emotions. You don't reason with a three-year-old. They're pure emotion. You know, try reasoning with a three-year-old in the middle of a temper tantrum. It's not going to happen. And especially those first 8 years of life have been reserved for making impressions on the heart. When we place too much attention on the academics in those years, we are missing an opportunity to make impressions that we may never have again. Because as I mentioned, isn't it true, our hearts tend to get a little harder as we get older. And so young children's hearts are very, very impressionable. So in this next hour, I'm going to attempt to describe to you a heart-based education. Gather my thoughts. I wanted to do these 2 hours back-to-back because I wanted to enjoy the rest of the conference, but excuse me if my thoughts are a little bit scatterbrained. The things that I'm going to talk to you about are, well, first of all, if you saw the last presentation, my objective is to prepare children to live lives of maximum joy. And I talked about three common core standards. We want to prepare our children's hearts to be inspired. We want to give them a vision of good things to hope for. And we want to teach them the right use of all things in love. Everything I'm talking about is going to help you to be able to do that with your children. The ideas that I'm going to talk to you about are not my own. I have been mentored by a group, a circle of warm-hearted educators and storytellers that lived 100 years ago. Someone in between the class came and asked where I got all these stories that I was talking about. I got it from them. These people were amazing. I feel like they left so much of their spirits in their writings that I feel like I know them. So I'll talk about my storytelling friends because that's how real they are to me. They noticed this shift from heart to mind going on. They talked about it. And I think that they were doing everything in their power to keep it from happening. The years between about 1880 to 1920 are referred to as the golden age of children's literature, as these storytellers filled book after book after book with stories to inspire hearts of children. These men and women were scholars. They knew their stuff. But they also had that heart part where they had uncommon wisdom, and they infused that into everything they wrote, whether it was about history or science or great literature or art or music. They wrote it in a way that young hearts could understand and get the message that they were giving to them. It's a treasure of immeasurable worth. And for a while, these writings have been buried in old dusty corners, I think because the Snow Queen took over and we're in love with academics. But technology has now made it possible that organizations like Internet Archive and Gutenberg and Google are scanning all these old books into the internet so that we can read them again. You know, without that, they would still be buried. And, you know, I don't think it's coincidence that the copyright cutoff year is 1923. That means all this good stuff before 1923, we have open and complete and free access to. It's amazing. Now, before I go further, I want to show you what we have to offer at Libraries of Hope. And I've always avoided doing this because I never felt comfortable making presentations into a commercial. But if I don't show you this, this is like giving you a menu with no way to deliver the food. And so I want to show you what we have. Sometimes I would tell these stories and mothers would write to me and say, I went to the library and I looked for the stories you were talking about and I can't find them. And I know you won't because they're not there. And I'd say, well, go look on Internet Archives, and they'd get on there and there's millions of books. And so you have to know what you're looking for. So what we've attempted to do is try to sift through and look for and find the very best books and make them in a way that's easy for you to access so that you can use them in your homes and with your children. And so far we have about 2,000 books online that, and you'll see here in just a second, that are organized so that you can use them. The main difference, I would say, between these old books and the modern ones, because I keep comparing, the modern books, especially those after about 1970, 1980, are primarily written to inform and entertain. And the books that were written 100 years ago truly were written to inspire hearts. When you read them, you will feel the difference. I hear that over and over and over. You just feel the difference from these books. And in our upside-down world, and our values have been turned upside down, these old books have traditional values, faith and freedom and family. I don't know if you've ever been on the secular humanist site, but there's a question and answer part where a parent wrote in and asked, if I go to the library, how can I be sure the books that I get for my children will have no religious element to them? They want to be safe from religion. And the answer was, if the American Library Association has recommended the book, you can be sure you'll be safe. That should tell us something. So we're trying to give you a library that you can go to online. And most of what we have available is free. We do publish books. I've been working on, have you ever tried to light a campfire by throwing a big log and putting a match to it? It doesn't work. You need kindling to get the fire burning. So I've been looking for the kindling stories, and that's what we print up. I make collections of stories and books, and that's what we offer for sale. But you'll see in a second that we have a lot of free resources online. You can go visit us at libraries of hope.com or Well Educated Heart. They're all part of the same site. You can get there either way. And when you get to the Well Educated Heart page, I didn't think I'd have internet, so I kind of tried to make a shot as best as I could. You're going to see these books in the middle are what we call the Forgotten Classics Family Library. And these are five series of books, and then there's a resource down at the bottom. The Story Hour series I'll tell you more about is for primarily children under the age of 8. The Nature, Art, and Music has nature, art, and music stories in it. The Freedom series is all American history stories. The World History series, World History, and The Great Lives. You'll have stories of writers and inventors, scientists. Those ones are in the process. Now, when you go into one of these libraries, let's click on the World History series. It's going to pull up this. Each of those libraries is going to have 12 images. These are actually covers of books that we have. So here's a book about India, China, Holland, and Spain. Those are the ones that I said that we do print up collections and sell. But also in connection with those books is an online library anybody can access. So let's say if you clicked on the online library of British Isles, and notice, because you'll need this in, there's a test later, there's not a test, but there's a resource guide I'm going to tell you about. Notice that each of the books is numbered 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. Okay, got that? So let's go into the British Isles Library. These are all books now from this wonderful golden age of children's literature. There is something for every age. I've looked for things for little children, middle children, older children. There's original source. There's all kinds of things. And I just encourage you to go, just randomly go and start reading. The education that is just contained in the prefaces and the introductions of these books is priceless. You will learn so much about everything from these storytellers in so many of these books. So it's a great resource for you. Now, if you click on any of these titles of the books I'm going to do in the Days of the Guild, if you haven't been in Internet Archive, this is what it looks like. And a book will come up, and you can see underneath it you have a full screen option so the book is big. And as you click on the pages, it will turn just like a book. You just read the book online. The color images are there, everything. If you want to make it, if the font is small, you can do a single page option, and it will make it enlarged. And over on the left-hand column, you see you can read it online. You can print it out as a PDF if you want to print out the book. You can put it on your Kindle. You've got a lot of resources. Some of the books are on Gutenberg. Most of them are going to be in Internet Archives. So, good with that. That's what we've got at Libraries of Hope. Now, I'll keep referring back. I might say something's in the Story Hour series. Now you'll know what I'm talking about. We live in extraordinary times. We have things that we can use, that we can give our children an education that no one in the history of the world has been able to give. Primarily because it's taken thousands of years to prepare the curriculum. It depends on today's technology to deliver it, and it requires the oxygen of freedom. With today's technology, our children can have front row seats at the Bolshoi Ballet or the Metropolitan Opera. They can stand next to Leonard Bernstein while he conducts the New York Philharmonic Orchestra. They can listen to symphonies played by the finest musicians in all the world, and then they can click the replay button and listen to it again. With today's technology, our children can look at masterpieces of art that were previously hidden in dark palace corridors, country manors, and museums all over the world. Our children, in one afternoon, can take a tour of art that the richest kings and queens of yesterday's would never have seen in an entire lifetime. With today's technology, our children can explore the deepest jungles of Africa with David Livingstone and the mysteries of the Orient with Marco Polo. They can be mentored by the greatest scientists, inventors, writers, artists, musicians, leaders, and humanitarians the world has ever known, all at a click of a mouse. This is an education fit for royalty, and it's free. So let's get started. To visualize this heart-based education, picture planting a seed into the ground. That seed isn't going to start to grow until, if you shine just the light of the sun on it, nothing's going to happen. You have to have the warmth of the sun to get the life force growing. And likewise with our children, we have to warm their hearts before we can teach them the intellectual things. As we warm their hearts, we start to get that growing process going, and they start to send the root systems down. And if we give them a very rich, nutrients-filled soil, they're going to start drawing those into them and feeding them. That's all things that are going on underneath the surface. You can't see that happening. And likewise with our children, you have to trust the process that it's happening. If you pull the plant up to check on it, you're going to kill the plant. You've got to let it grow. Then when the plant grows up and it opens its leaves, now it's got something to catch the light with. Now it's got something. Now children have something to catch the intellectual light with. Does that analogy make sense? If you try to shine the intellectual light before the heart is warmed and they've got something to catch it, it's just, you know, the sandcastle thinks it's going to wash off. We want them to love what they're learning first. The primary tools, we speak to the heart differently than we speak to the mind. The mind, we're going to use facts and information, primarily questions. But the heart, we use images and feelings and impressions. We speak to the heart in a different way. And the primary tools that we have for reaching the heart are music, art, poetry, and story. Do you remember I told you about Goethe, that, you know, he was asked what he did every day? Well, this is what he did. This kept his heart full. These are the primary tools that we have of reaching the hearts of our children. Now, I'm going to break this down by age group, but even if your children are older, well, the first group is ages 0 to 4. Even if your children are older, the principles are going to apply, and you're going to have grandchildren, right? There will be little children in your life, so these principles are important to know. These first years are the familiar years. And sometimes, you know, we say we want our children to hurry up and grow so we can start teaching them. Well, before they ever speak, there are three languages that will speak to their heart before them. The first language of the heart is music. Music is pure emotion. A baby will recognize music. You know, when we listen to music, some music makes us feel sad and some happy, some agitated, some peaceful. That comes intact from the moment of birth. They've done experiments on babies where they play music with discords and it agitates them. They don't like it. Lullabies, calm babies. So your first communication is singing. That is reaching their hearts. Now, every one of us is deeply and profoundly... Does anyone in here not think you're musical? Anybody, you think you're not musical? I want you to try and walk to your next class out of rhythm. Or I want you to try and clap your hands out of rhythm. Or speak out of rhythm. I can't talk out of rhythm. I just talk in rhythm. We are deeply and profoundly musical in that rhythm sense. And it's that rhythm that gives us a sense of well-being. Now, I want to go back for just a minute. The reason that the music matters is because the music can carry messages into our heart that words can't reach. Music can travel deeper to the heart than words. When you read about the Greek orators, they would have musicians playing behind them because they knew that that music would drive what they were saying deeper into their hearts. Think about going to a movie and the music behind what you're watching on the movie. What would Jaws be without the music? You know, you just see the shark coming. The music, you know, you put sets us on edge. Music is vital. The rhythm part of the music gives us a sense of order and well-being. Our hearts beat thousands of times every day. And as long as our heart is in rhythm, we don't think about it. We just go about our business. Have you ever had your heart skip a beat? And all of a sudden, whoa, something's wrong here. We have the rhythm of day and night. There have been studies and work done with people who have had strokes that the order and rhythm of music will help restore their capacities in their brain. And I thought, I'm a pacer. When I have to, my girls will attest to this. When I am trying to work through an idea, I'll just start pacing the floor. And it wasn't until I was thinking about these things that I realized what I was doing. My pacing set the rhythm that made it possible for me to organize my thoughts. So music is very important in our children's life to give them that sense of order. But there's something interesting about the rhythm. Well, first let me say, the reason, the great composers, the great masters of music. We call them the music masters because they mastered the rules of music. They were able to start composing music that made human beings feel emotions we had never felt before. We felt things we never felt before. And they even attempted to reveal the glory of God to our hearts. When you read why they composed music, that's why they were doing it. Well, since then, music has been reduced down to three chords and a beat. And sometimes we don't do the three chords. So we've got the beat. And when you take away the harmonies and melody of music and just have that beat, the opposite of feeling happens. That when you have that repetitive beat without the harmony, without the melody, it shuts off our feelings and it shuts off our thoughts. When you study the savage tribes, the natives, they would do those war dances with strong rhythmic beats because it would put them in a trance-like state where they weren't thinking or feeling anything. And so we want our children to be familiar and comfortable with the rich, beautiful music that is available to us. And one thing that we can do is make sure from the time they're born, play that music in the background. You know, some kids grow up and they close their ear to classical music because it's not familiar to them. But if you want them to have that avenue open to their heart for them to feel things deeply, make that a familiar part of their life. Singing to little children is the best way we have of planting eternal truths. Talking to them is the least effective. Singing is the most effective. And in our... I missed all these things. I need to pace. If I could just pace up here, I could keep all my thoughts together. I forgot to tell you, the 0 to 4 years, these are called the familiar years because a child is starting to make sense of his immediate world. So when you're looking for selections in poetry, music, stories, and whatever, you're looking for stories that have to do with mommies and daddies and babies because they can understand that. They're trying to make sense of that. So that's what I'm trying to show. This is an art piece of artwork you would use in that age, and music is our first language. And our children's songbook is a wealth of songs that we can use with our children from the time they're little. Sometimes we just reserve it for primary Sunday. This should be a part, the main communication for children on their day in all your things while you're changing diapers, to sing with them because those are being implanted in their heart. I have such a fun memory of my little 5-year-old granddaughter Madison skipping down the sidewalk on a sunshiny afternoon, singing at the top of her lungs, "I think the world is glorious and lovely as can be. I sing and sing and sing and sing my thanks to God above." That's the gift of music that we give our children. I also love the We Sing series, if you're familiar with that. The second language that reaches children before speech is art. Art is worth 1,000 years. Art is immediate communication, and children will imitate what they see. So we want to give them, especially fine art, is going to give them things to imitate that are very, very good. You can make picture books of fine art images that they can sit and look through. And I'm going to show you in a minute where you can, the great resource to get some fine art images for that. But first, I have to tell you a very sad story. The Snow Queen has attacked the art world. If you have gone into a modern art museum and scratched your head, there's a reason for that. I'm going to attempt to communicate something to you. Lavishly Zasix, the faux Roth perpendicular. Does that mean something to you? Now, all of those words mean something to me. I just wanted to express them in my own way. And so I threw out all the rules of grammar. And in fact, I thought a couple of the words would sound better backwards. So I just reversed them. That's what happened in the art world. About 1920, they threw out the rules of art and said, whatever goes, go for it. Now, just like music, where I said that the music masters uncovered the rules of music, the artists also had uncovered the rules of art that made it possible so that they could so that they could paint a painting and it would instantly communicate a message to you, no matter where you lived in the world, no matter what culture you were in, no matter what time in history, this painting is going to communicate instantly to your heart. They mastered this. Well, the intellectuals of the early 1920s thought that this was unsophisticated and sentimental. They despised storytelling in art. And so this whole body of work from 1848, whole body of art from 1848 to 1920 was erased from all the university textbooks and from all the studies in school, and the museums put a lot of the artwork away in storage. Well, a few years ago, a Dr. Ross, who was an expert in art history, was at a museum and he saw this work of art that moved him in a way that he had never been moved before. This is by the artist Bouguereau. This isn't the piece he was looking at, but this is by the same artist. He was transfixed by it. He could not take his eyes off of it. It just fed his soul. And he thought, why have I never heard of this artist in all my study? Why have I never heard of him? And that's when he did the research and found this whole era that has been erased from our knowledge. And so for the last 15 years or so, he's been working to restore this artwork to us. If you go to artrenewal.org, there's so many good things on there. Read what he's talking about with this art. It will be very enlightening to you. But what they've done is gathered over 80,000 of these art reproductions now and put them in high-resolution images online that you can just go and look at them and gather this beautiful artwork. And on the site it says that it's only for online viewing, but I wrote and specifically asked if mothers can print these out so that you can have them for your children, and permission is granted for that. So now you can make these wonderful picture books for your children to use. I think you'll really love what you find there. And if you haven't started it, do you have a family art gallery? Wouldn't you rather have art on your walls that is speaking to the hearts of your children every day than just having art that matches your couch? We don't think about spending $1,000 or $1,500 for a flat screen TV that's going to end up in the landfill in a few years, but we don't like to spend $300 or $400 on a work of art, and yet that art will speak to a child's heart for a lifetime. So I encourage you, this artresourcecenter.com has art reproductions. There's a lot of companies online that you can do it. It fit all budgets. Let the gift givers in your life know that you're doing this. I bet there's a lot more grandmothers than me that would rather invest in fine art than cheap plastic toys that break in a little while. So this is a huge way that we can reach the hearts of our children. Or we can give them this. But I don't have anything against him. The third language that reaches the hearts of our children before speech is actually poetry, which combines music, the rhythm of music, and imagery, which is really going to come from the words in time. But a lot of people don't like poetry today. And I think a lot of it comes because we are in such a literal society that we've lost the ability to draw from the imagery, or maybe you were given the intellectual treatment of poetry first before you felt it. You know, I hated doing the iambic pentameter, you know, marks, whatever, but when you feel the beauty of poetry, poetry can carry messages deep, deep into our hearts that just words can't reach. And when I read the books by my storytelling friends, no matter what book they were writing about, history or science or whatever, they would just insert a couple lines of poetry here and there. They'd put it at the beginning of the chapter. They'd put it on blank spaces. They put little pieces of poetry, and I thought, really what they're doing is they're saying, okay, I told you this. Now I want your heart to understand it deeper. That's what poetry can do, and the first step is nothing is surpassed Mother Goose. Mother Goose helps our children. Well, in fact, if you wish your child to love Homer, give him Mother Goose. That's from my storytelling friend. On our site at the Story Hour series in the Young Children's section, we've got tons of Mother Goose. These are simple enough for you to store up a great reservoir to just use constantly with your children. At this age, they love repetition. They love to hear the same things over and over and over again. Story. Story is probably the most important tool that we have to reach hearts. Story now takes imagery and it moves it. Story is moving imagery. That's why our hearts respond. You know, you can be sitting along listening to somebody like me ramble on, and if I start to tell you a story, I saw it in the last hour. As soon as the story comes, you know, there you are, because your heart recognizes it. There's the moving images. For little children, well, so the heart recognizes it, and then it attaches a feeling to it. If you can awaken interest in any subject by finding the right story. So let me go back to art for a second. Remember I said we want our children to feel art. I was looking at the Virginia art standards, and in grades as young as kindergarten and first grade, the way they're introducing art is they're teaching kids to identify line, texture, design, and shape, which will come in time, but it's not the first step. We want them to feel it first, and story will help them feel it. So this is a painting by von Bremen, a German artist, and this is just a little story that you can use to help move it and bring it to life. Look at the fun. Can you all see it, I hope? Look at the fun these children are having. What's going on? Look, a tiny little pet bird. How they love it. Can you see the oldest boy holding up his finger for the little bird to stand on? You can almost see the little bird peck at the piece of bread the boy is holding in his left hand. The child behind him is leaning her head on his shoulder. These children love each other. Isn't that what we want? Is that, oh, that's what love looks like if I put my head on my brother's shoulder? They're a happy family, aren't they? The littlest brother has climbed up on a cushion on the chair so he can be closer. He's holding out his finger very steadily and quietly, saying, "Let the bird come and stand on my finger." The little bird isn't afraid. He knows the children won't hurt him. The little girl stopped reading her book so she can watch the bird she loves. These are four little children in a country far away in Germany. Now, there's a lot of little stories like this that I've put together in the Stories of Painting in the Story Hour series. And if you go to the Story Hour series and look at that online library, that's specifically stories of children and mommies and daddies and animals that little children will enjoy and that you can start to awaken an interest and a feeling in art. Let the first stories that you tell little children be by heart. Tell them about when you were a little girl, when grandma was a little girl. Aesop's fables have been around for a long time because they are wonderful, and they're short, and they're about animals. So keep a supply of Aesop's fables. And three is the time for the three stories, the three bears, the three little pigs, the three billy goats Gruff. As children listen to stories, it's teaching them to sustain thought. It's teaching them the habit of attention that is so vital for them as they're going to start learning how to read. And they're starting to learn how to create images, which their heart needs, from words. So this is a vital thing. I was just at a family reunion, and we had our little four-year-old Emma do the family night, and she told the entire story of the three little bears by heart, beginning to end, and it was so cute with the mother's tisk, tisk, tisk. And she is also the one that informed us that the reason that Jesus told Moroni to bury the golden plates is so that no one would put them in the dishwasher or color on them or rip the pages. Maybe they do reason earlier than I'm giving them credit for. The most important book in a heart-based education is the King James Version of the Bible. The King James Version has everything, music, imagery, poetry, and the best stories ever told. I would start reading the Bible to a child the day he's born because of all these things that are speaking to his heart before language kicks in. I find it interesting that the children in our country that only had a Bible in their house to learn to read from, by the age of six, we're actually reading books like Pilgrim's Progress and Don Quixote, and that we, with our millions of dollars of reading programs, our children struggle to read Little Bear. I think it has to do that the Bible has rich, beautiful language, and children at that age, they soak that in. The Bible will help them so much. And I'll just mention, we've put together a story Bible that keeps the King James Version language And we've just broken the stories down into little sections. We put the font bigger so as readers start reading, there's not so much on the page. And in the Old Testament, the stories, you know, start to give you the flow of stories. You know how in the Bible they kind of jump around. So that could be a resource that you might want to consider. And nature, if the nature teaches the hearts of our children, unlike any other classroom, if the trees and flowers, the clouds and the wind all tell wonderful stories to the child, he has sources of happiness of which no power can deprive him. Nature is the first science lab in God's university. And not only will our children find endless delights to learn about and study, it's teaching their hearts important lessons like we reap what we sow. Rainbows always follow storms. Tiny acorns grow into mighty oaks. Hairy caterpillars turn into beautiful butterflies. The first and most important science lesson is a sense of wonder. If we skip that step, that sense of wonder, science will never be appealing to our children. Stories help to build that sense of wonder. And the ones that work just right for this age, 0 to 4 familiar, is to tell stories of mother birds taking care of their babies and mother bees taking care of their babies and the kinds of houses that they build for them. My 9-year-old granddaughter just informed me that evidently the female praying mantis eats the male while she's mating with him. So you might want to hold off on that story till they're a little bit older, but you know, it's up to you. Nothing beats a flower garden for reaching the heart and teaching the heart about beauty. I am so thankful that my father loved flowers and his father loved flowers because he taught me all their names when I was just a little girl. And children love to name things. I love the hydrangeas by his office and the hibiscus that grew outside my window, the gardenia by the back door and the magnolia tree in the front. And I distinctly remember lying in the grass under the camellia bush and first feeling that God loved me. Nature does that to our children. We've got to let them spend time with nature itself. And we used to, on May Day, we would make little paper baskets. I've heard May Day's become a real political something, which is sad. We made little paper baskets, and we would pick flowers from the garden, and we'd go to neighbors, to the older people, and we'd hang it on their door and ring the doorbell and run and hide in the bush and wait to watch their reactions. And that was so much fun. And my daughter just did that for, she just sent me an email of the little May Day basket she did with her little girls. And she said that night she was combing little Madison's hair, and Madison said to her mommy, "I feel so happy inside. I just love doing things for other people." And I was thinking to myself, "I'm so happy my mommy made up this plan." Now that is a successful heart-based education plan for the day. All right, now we're going to hurry. Age 4 to 8, the imaginative years. Remember in the last hour I said nothing has ever been created that didn't first exist as an image or a vision in someone's heart. These years from 4 to 8 are to help them build up their imagination skills. So before this, we're dealing with things that they can see and are in their world. Now this is the year for them to start seeing things that their eyes have never seen. That means these are the years for the fairy tales. Fairy tales have lasted hundreds of years for a reason. They're wrapped around kernels of truth. We've got to watch out for fractured fairy tales. Some parents, I hear, only want to give their children facts. But by doing that, they are depriving their children of this chance to learn to dream and to imagine. It's from our rich heritage of fairy tales that the young heart is impressed with ideas of good and evil, right and wrong, justice and injustice, and the lessons are delivered in a way that the heart can understand. Charles Kingsley said, "Fairy tales are for beauty and wisdom and truth, and for making children love noble deeds and trusting God to help them through." I was wondering one day at the fact that, you know, I thought, why are all the fairy tales about princes and princesses and kings and queens? And the thought occurred to me, I really believe fairy tales are inspired. And a poem came back to my mind that my dad had taught me. And it was, "I am a child of royal birth. My father is king of heaven and earth. I was raised on the courts on high, a daughter beloved, a princess am I. And I wondered, you know, maybe that's our Heavenly Father's way of planting in our hearts our divine worth, that little children are learning about royalty, which they are. This is also the years that we can introduce Greek and Norse mythology and other mythology. I never liked mythology until I started reading them from my storytelling friends. They infused a wisdom in there that I hadn't seen before. There are also many classic stories. These children are not too young to start learning the stories of Chaucer, of Dante, of Homer, of Shakespeare, of Cervantes, all of these. And then my storytelling friends have put them in a form that children this age will understand. And you can find those in the Great Literature Library in the Story Hour series. And you know, I don't know if you've heard this or not. We've got remedial math and remedial reading. Well, evidently our kids have lost the ability to play. And so they're organizing remedial play classes for kids now. When you give your children stories, they are going to have endless stories to draw from for imaginative play. And that's the most important work of this child, of this time in childhood, is to let them play. Give them props. Give them blocks that they can imagine with. Where did my picture go? That's what I'm looking for. Well, there were some, have you seen the little wooden pieces? They look like figures. You can get a bag of them, like 40 for $10, and you can color them and put a little velvet, gold rickrack and make royalty. Endless imaginative play for children. Also on the resource page, I've got a section for plays, that there are little plays that children this young can act out based on fairy tales and such. Wonderful resource. For music at this age, introduce them to the great operas and ballets based on story tales, Swan Lake, Cinderella, Sleeping Beauty. For art, give them the art from mythology. This is Corot's painting of Orpheus and Eurydice, or Persephone. For poetry, look for the imaginative poetry. Robert Louis Stevenson's A Child's Garden of Verses Can't Be Beat. And in these old books are beautiful illustrations that you can print out and make books. You know, let that be your children's first copy work, to copy these wonderful poems and to stretch their imagination. For nature, if you go to the nature, art, and music section, I've got a book on rock stories, one for stars, one for insects, one's for birds. If we want our children to love the world, they've got to know about it. We seldom love that which we know little about. These storytellers really excelled in the stories about nature, and there's a whole resource of them for you on the site in the nature. There's my little wooden figures. Consider starting a nature journal at this age, and be sure to add little pieces of poetry in there to keep it heart ready. Now the ages of 8 to 12 to 14 are known as the heroic years. With their image, a nation's skills, and with their sense of good and evil, they are now going to start imagining and envisioning who they want to be. So this is the year to start feeding them stories about people, all kinds of people. Age 8 is when the first intellectual shift happens. And, you know, isn't that coincidence that we get baptized at age 8 and the Lord says you can understand right and wrong? Well, neuroscientists have backed up the Lord, if you're wondering about that. But they start asking, is this real? Is this fact or fiction? And so this is a great, the epic and legendary heroes is a great bridge, because they're part fact and part legend. This is the age to give them stories of Robin Hood and King Arthur and Roland and Siegfried and Beowulf. And if you go in the epic and legendary hero section on the Story Hour series, again, you'll find stories suitable for this age. Now they're going to start studying art by reading about great artists and studying about their works. They're going to learn about music by reading stories of the great musicians and the works they created. Scientists are going to teach them how to look at the world. They're going to be mentored by the greatest humanitarians, inventors, writers, classic literature. This is just the age where it just, they're ready for it. They're reading From the 4 to 8, you're going to be doing a lot of read aloud with them, but at this age now, they can do a lot of reading on their own. The Doctrine and Covenants tells us that we need to obtain a knowledge of history, of countries, of kingdoms, of laws of God and man, become acquainted with all good books, languages, tongues, and people, things at home and abroad, wars and perplexities of nations. I picture a log jam coming down the river. There's so many stories to work into your day. And my daughter's about to have her fifth little girl, and I know how busy you are. And I've struggled with that. How can you manage all these stories? How can you quickly have a resource that can give you something in an instant that you can draw from? And so I'm going to try and show you what my brain is trying to put together. With history, I have a problem with the common study where you take a section of history, like ancient history, and you study it for a year, and then the next year you maybe do middle studies, and then finally in 4 years you get to modern, and then you rotate it around. So you might go through it twice. Well, I have a problem with that, first of all, because you're cutting, story needs the flow. If your heart is going to recognize the patterns and lessons, you've got to see the story flow from beginning to end. And that chops it up. Also, 4 years in the life of a child is an eternity. So if you wait for 4 years to come back, that's a long time. And the other problem it poses is that you tend to do a fire hose approach. Because, we got to get this all done now because we're not coming back for 4 years. So you blast them with a lot of information. So I was trying to find a way that it could, instead of blasting with a fire hose, that it could just happen gradually, like water, gentle water coming and soaking into the ground and the roots start growing and it just keeps layering and layering and layering. So in your books you should have it. I've devised a yearly rotation plan so that each year you're returning back to keep layering in. In Isaiah it says we learn line upon line, precept upon precept, here a little, there a little. If you picture I picture it as a giant jigsaw puzzle. And what we can provide them are the edge pieces to work within. And then we can give our children the pieces that they can start fitting together. Don't we tend to, we do all the chewing. We select what we want them to study and then we chew it really good. And then we turn to them and say, open up, here it comes. And they go, mm-mm. We forget that the flavor is in the chewing. So what I envision is children being able to, because we want to reach their hearts, they're going to learn history through stories, through art, through music and poetry, and it's going to layer in gradually. So each of these months is built around those 12 books that I talked about. Starting with American history, because I think that's the most important. And you can see that month one, it might focus on that exploration period. The first year, you may only read the story about Columbus. But then when you come back the next year, the child will recognize Columbus. Maybe they'll want to learn more. Maybe they'll say, well, what about these other explorers? And they start learning about that. So each year when the child comes back, it's layering in more and more understanding of the topics. And then each of the countries tie into a section of American history. It connects for a reason. For instance, the reason I have China and India with Columbus is because where did he think he was going? China and India. Each of those have a connecting point. Now this is what I'll quickly show you, and I don't know if you can see this. This is part of a resource guide that we've put together, and there's a copy of it on our table out of the vendor. It's free. It's on our site. It's a PDF you can just download. This provides your puzzle pieces so that you can go, and this will direct you to stories that will fit within that month's parameter. It will direct you to the online library that, for instance, if you go to Germany, that says there's some German fairy tales in the S, that means the Story Hour series, and 3, it means it's the third library. There's a German epic and legendary hero. It's in the S, I think, 5 section. So it immediately will pinpoint where you can find stories that will help start putting these pieces of the puzzle together. I've also got a link to stories that we have in all of our books, but a lot of them will bring you to the online libraries of this golden age of children's literature. I've also included a lot. Hollywood did do some right things. Uh-oh. Hollywood did right things. Well, that was surprising to come out of my mouth. They did a lot of really wonderful epic history movies, and they're family-friendly. So I just have alerted you to those that you might choose. I wouldn't use those as the first introduction, but they help to make the image clearer in children's minds. And if you are familiar with imdb.com, that gives you all the information, parental advisories, reviews, everything. So I hope you can take advantage of that resource. Do any of you do notebooking? Do you know what notebooking is? No. Well, go to notebookingpages.com and look it up. This all works wonderfully with notebooking. But the difference, I would say, is typically they work with facts and information. For your notebooking pages, you're doing heart things. So instead of a face shot of Columbus, I would do a picture from these old books, and we're trying to get this together for you, of story pictures. So I'm picturing one of Columbus walking down the street, and children are pointing their finger at him and ridiculing him. Because which is more important to a child's heart, to know that he sailed in 1492, or to have an example of a man who keeps going no matter what the opposition or the ridicule is? We're looking for things to relate to their heart. And story clubs, go to gardenofliberty.org in a little while, and there's going to be all kinds of resources on there for you. And I'm skipping really fast because I have to wind up. How many more minutes? A child with a well-educated heart is going to go on. At this point, the intellectual things are going to start sticking because his heart is fully warmed. And that's the goal. We want heart and mind to work together. All of these things are meant to warm the heart of a child. What happens next when you get to that point? Well, I love a phrase in Charlotte Mason where she said, "True education is between a child's soul and God." Let me read this. This is the vision of a well-educated heart. If you follow this heart-based plan, by the time a child is around 14 years old, he will very realistically have read over 1,000 books. That means he's looking at life through 1,000 different eyes rather than through the narrow view of his own experiences. He won't shy away from the harder reads. He's ready to take them on. The vocabulary he's naturally picked up from his extensive reading will serve him well. He's already friends with Cervantes, Homer, and Shakespeare. Poetry and imagery won't scare him away. His heart will have examined the life of the scientist, musician, artist, businessman, leader, statesman, parent, and will begin to catch the vision of who he wants to be. Along with that vision, he clearly sees the price that needs to be paid for that chosen field. His heart is willing to pay the price of hard work to achieve his goals, because his heart is now set because he has seen the whole story play out. He has great hope for the future. Obstacles do not paralyze him with fear. He is now ready for a more formal stage of learning, the intellectual part. His brain is developmentally ready. His heart is filled with ideas he wants to express. So now the rules of grammar have meaning and use. They're going to make it possible for him to share his ideas. The rules of art and music will also give him an avenue of expression. He's ready to tackle the more formal lessons of science because his heart has a lot of things that it wants to understand more fully. Because life and learning have never been separated, learning will be a welcome lifelong companion. He will go on not only to acquire job skills, he will be a compassionate employer or a loyal and hardworking employee, a loving parent, a devoted friend, and above all, a joyful human being. This is the vision of the well-educated heart. I just want to close with a dream that I had. I dreamt that I was in a large, crowded, noisy feeding hall. And in this hall, there were long banquet tables. And my sense was this is where we spent our time. And all during the day, there were set times that we all had to sit down and we all had to eat. And we all were fed the same food and we were expected to eat the same food. And we didn't think anything of it because this is just how life was. I didn't know what was outside this room. There weren't any windows. But in my dream, I noticed a door that evidently I hadn't seen before. So I slipped over to it and made sure no one was looking and turned the knob and stepped outside into a thick fog. I could hear horse hoofs coming my way, and out of the fog came a horse-drawn carriage. And a tall, lanky man got out of the carriage and beckoned for me to follow him, which I did. I remember I had to run to keep up with him because he had such long strides, but I was drawn to the features of his face. He had such a kindly smile, and there was a light in his eyes that made me feel safe to be with him. At first, he didn't say anything to me, but he finally introduced himself and told me that he was Hans Christian Andersen. And just as he told me that, the fog broke, and I found he had led me to the most glorious meadow you can ever imagine. Everywhere, as far as the eye can see, were flowers of every color. There were butterflies fluttering and songs of 100 birds on the breezes. The sky was this deep blue with big white billowy clouds, and I could feel the sun warm on my face. He motioned to me to lead the way on a path that now meandered through this beautiful meadow. And at first, I was very anxious, and I was worried. I said, I'm going to miss my 2:30 feeding time, and what are the people going to think of me? But pretty soon, the joy of the meadow so filled my heart that I didn't care anymore. And my friend and I spent the entire afternoon together as he patiently waited while I looked at every new delight that was around every bend in the path. And then, just as the path ended, my friend said that he had to leave me. We were standing in a grove of tall trees, and I said, but I don't know where to go from here. And he looked heavenward and said, God directs. Suddenly the scene changed, and I was back in the large, crowded feeding hall. And as I worried, everybody surrounded me and scolded me. Where have you been? Didn't you know you missed your 2:30 feeding time? And I said, I've just been out in the most glorious meadow with Hans Christian Andersen himself. And I started to tell him more, but they just looked at me in disgust and rolled their eyes and left me to myself. But it didn't matter, because all of the joy of the meadow was stored in my heart, and I knew that I would have it with me always and forever. And the dream ended, and I woke up. Maybe coincidentally, I was at a book sale a day or two later. I told you I love to rummage through old books, which my table out there will tell you, looking for treasures. And as I was leaving, there was a book that caught my eye. It was The Fairy Tale Story of My Life by Hans Christian Andersen. I'd never seen an image of him before, knew anything about his life. I only knew about his fairy tales. But as I pulled the book out, there on the cover was an image of my friend. And as I opened the book and read the first paragraph on the first page, he had written, the history of my life will say to the world what it says to me. There is a loving God who directs all things for good. I, too, believe in a loving God who directs all things for good. And I hope that some of the ideas that I have shared with you will bring you closer to him, that you, with your families, will live joyfully ever after. Thank you.
LDS Home Educators is a nonprofit, all-volunteer organization dedicated to providing inspiration to homeschool families. We hope you enjoyed this recording. If you are interested in listening to more recordings or would like to participate in a future conference, please visit our website at ldshe.org.